Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 86. Text number 30. Chapter entitled Arjun Kidnaps Subhadra. Vacha Madhuraya Prinhan. Iram ahana tarpitam padavanka gato vishno samsprisham chanakar mudha vajha madhuraya prinham Idam ahana tarpitan padavanka gato vishno samsprishan chanakar mudha. Vachamadhuraya pinhan Idam ahanatarpitan Padavankakato vishno Samsprishan chanakarmadha Vachamadhuraya pinhan Idam ahanatarpitan Padavankakato vishno Vacha, in a voice, Madhuraya, gentle, Prinan, trying to please them, Idam, this, Aha, he said, Ana, with food, Tarpitan, who had been gratified, Pado, the feet, Anka, on his lap. Gato, situated. Vishnu, of Lord Krishna. Samsprishan, massaging. Sanakai, slowly. Mudha, happily. Translation. When they had eaten to their full satisfaction, for their further pleasure, the king began to speak slowly and in a gentle voice as he held Lord Vishnu's feet in his lap and happily massaged them. Shri Bahulashva Uvacha Bhavan hi sarva bhutanam Atma sakshi svadrig vibho Atanastvat padam bojam Smaratam darshanam gata. Sri Bahulashva said, O Almighty Lord, you are the soul of all created beings, their self-illumined witness. And now you are giving your audience to us who constantly meditate on your lotus feet. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains Bahulashva's inner thoughts as follows. Bahulashva glorifies Lord Krishna as the inspiring soul of all life and consciousness, thinking that even an inert dullard like himself could be awakened to devotional awareness by his mercy. He glorifies the Lord as the witness of all pious and impious actions, confident that the Lord remembers whatever little devotional service he has ever done. And he glorifies him as self-illumined, never needing to be enlightened or informed by any external source. With the knowledge that the Lord has always been aware of Bahulashva's long-cherished secret desire to see him. So this pastime, Krishna visiting Sutadeva and Bahulashva, which we are hearing after Sukadeva Goswami has described the pastime of Arjuna kidnapping Subhadra. Some parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam are in chronological order and some parts are not in chronological order for various different reasons. The speaker, Sukadeva Goswami, who is making the King Parikshit's hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam even more relishable, because Sukadeva Goswami is speaking it in such a way as to help Parikshit Maharaj to relish the rasa, the taste, the nectarian taste of Srimad Bhagavatam. He is not speaking it in a dry way, going through the numbers like that. Sometimes people paint pictures like that if they don't really have an artistic bent of mind. Or if they're trying to develop their artistic skills, sometimes they will begin just by joining the dots and going through the numbers. And gradually they get the ability to see how things are put together in a very artistic and creative way, and then eventually their artistic skills may flourish. Here, of course, Sukadeva Goswami is very, very expert in speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, and he is speaking it in a very relishable way. Therefore, not everything he says is in chronological order, but according to particular moods that both he and Parikshit Maharaj are relishing, and also for the benefit of those who will read Srimad Bhagavatam in the future, such as us. So the pastime of Subhadra, of course, happened way, way back in the Srimad Bhagavatam, around about just before chapter 58, I think it is. You remember that in chapter 58, Lord Krishna visited Indraprastha to visit the Pandavas. And at that stage, he actually Subhadra was there. And after that, it was during that visit that Krishna and Arjuna went hunting into the forest, the Gandhava forest, and there Krishna chose his wife Kalindi. I think it had been his first wife, but actually Subhadra was already present in Indraprastha when Krishna made that visit. As far as I understand, sometimes it's said that that Arjuna married Subhadra while he was in exile. From my understanding, that is the first exile of Arjuna after when the they tried to burn down, kill the Pandavas in the house of Lak, right? And therefore, Arjuna was for about 1 year. He was. Right. So right. And I think that was after. Was that after the house of luck? Yes. So it was after the house of luck. Arjuna was in exile, and as far as I understand, that was when he actually went to Dwarka, and he took Subhadra as his wife, with the assistance of Krishna. And he stayed there for the 4 months of the rainy season, and I think it was on the last day of his exile that he actually sort of revealed himself as Arjuna. So that's going way, way back, around about chapter 58 in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those events occurred. After that, of course, there was the events that led to Maharaj Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Jagya. Actually, before that, there was a visit to Kurukshetra. I think in the Srimad Bhagavatam it describes the Rajasuya sacrifice after, but before. But I think first there was the visit to Kurukshetra. After the visit to Kurukshetra, then there was Maharaj Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Jagya, after they killed Jarasandha. And actually in the Garga Samhita it describes it, then around about that time Ugrasena performed a huge Ashwamedha Jagya, and all the residents of Vrindavan actually came to that big Jagya. So then, after those events, there was the gambling match where Draupadi was then attempted to be stripped naked, and then the Pandavas were exiled into the forest for how many years? Was it 13? 13. And it was around about this time of the exile that Krishna killed Salva, Dantavakra, and after killing Dantavakra, as described in the Garga Samhita, or actually the Padma Purana, that he then went to Vrindavan and wound up his Vrindavan Leela. There's this huge flower aeroplane that came down with 2,000 horses pulling it and 2,000 wheels, and it was about 40 miles long, something like that, and all the residents of Vrindavan assumed their eternal forms and went back to Goloka Vrindavan. And in chapter 76 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a long purport quoting from Sanatana Goswami how in different forms Krishna, in one form he went back to Goloka Vrindavan with the residents, in another form he stayed manifesting pastimes in Braja, and another form he returned to Dwarka. But it was actually during these years when Arjuna, the Pandavas, were still in exile that Krishna actually went and visited Bahulashva and Shrutadeva. which is what we're up to now. And of course, they hadn't visited Krishna because they each sort of had a vow to worship the Lord in their own homes, in their own kingdom. So they very, very nicely worshipped the deities and performed all sorts of devotional service. And therefore, because of their vows, they actually didn't go to visit Krishna in Dwarka. But they had a long-cherished desire to serve Krishna. At this stage, of course, this is getting very, very near to the end of Krishna's pastimes. After this, because Krishna goes back to Dwarka, and then he goes on a peace mission to try and avert the war. And because war is inevitable, it cannot be averted. Therefore, Balaram, understanding that, he then goes on pilgrimage, which we've already read about. And while on pilgrimage, he killed Ramahasham and Balvala. But of course, those events have already been discussed as well in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Krishna at this stage, of course, is maybe 100 years old or something like that, still appearing like a fresh youth, looking about 16 years old. And for many, many years, Bahulasra and Shrutadev have been desiring to serve Krishna in an intimate way. And after many years, then Krishna actually appeared. So you can imagine, after a lifetime waiting for Krishna, and then finally Krishna comes to your home or your palace. And so when Krishna arrived there in Mithila, Bahulasra was a king and Shrutadev was a brahmana, although one was dealing with great opulence in Bahulasra, and Shrutadev was very, very simple brahmana. And yet they were both very, very detached from the material world and utilized everything in the service of Krishna. So, but they were very just performing their devotional service and always maintaining that desire within their heart to serve Krishna and to have that opportunity to develop their loving relationship with Krishna. And so Krishna understood that very confidential desire within their heart and actually came to their palace. They weren't it's interesting because they weren't advertising themselves far and wide as great devotees. They weren't trying to Bahulasra wasn't trying to capture the attention of the world by building his empire. Shrutadev, very, very simple life. Neither of them were advertising themselves at all, just humbly performing their service according to their lot in life. But Krishna reciprocated with that devotional mood, which is a very good lesson for the devotees, that if we actually follow in their footsteps, because this is the purpose of reading Srimad Bhagavatam, is that we hear about the lives of great devotees, and hearing about their lives, we can understand how they perform devotional service in such a way that they become perfect and they actually capture the attention of Krishna. And this is a very wonderful example that they performed, just going about their service, but Krishna understood, as it's described here. Here Sukadeva Goswami calls Krishna Vishnu in the word for word. Vishnu of Lord Krishna, describing here that Vahalashva, when Krishna appeared, he glorified Krishna as the inspiring soul of all life and consciousness, thinking that even an inert dullard like himself could be awakened to devotional awareness by his mercy. He glorifies the Lord as the witness of all pious and impious actions, confident that the Lord remembers whatever little devotional service he has ever done. And he glorifies him as self-illumined, never needing to be enlightened or informed by any external source, with the knowledge that the Lord has always been aware of Bahulashva's long-cherished secret desire to see him. So this is the confidence of a devotee. A devotee should have that confidence, and it's actually a measure of one's Krishna consciousness, how we have that consciousness. If a devotee doesn't have that consciousness, there may be some lack of Krishna consciousness, a lack of understanding that the Lord is situated within the heart, and that he is witnessing the service of a devotee. Therefore, devotees, they don't advertise to others their own devotional service. It is a confidential mood, relationship between them, their spiritual master, and Lord Krishna. But Krishna does reciprocate. He especially reciprocates with those devotees who have that confidence in Krishna. They're maintaining, yes, I am doing this service, and I have the faith that Krishna will reciprocate. Similarly, we see in Jagannath Puri, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, when he went there, every day Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go to the temple of Jagannath. But devotees like Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur, they could never go. So the Lord would go and so many devotees would accompany him, but they couldn't. They didn't go. Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, and so he was not allowed to enter the Jagannath temple. And Sanatana Goswami had also associated with the Muslim community, and therefore he was also considered a reject or someone who was not fit to enter the temple of the Lord. So on one hand you have those devotees of the Jagannath temple, some of them, not all of them, advertising themselves as great devotees, we are fit to serve the Lord and you are not. And you know, Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur, although they are the most elevated, Haridas Thakur is Namacharya, and yet they are considering themselves unfit to enter the temple of Lord Jagannath. And yet Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every day after he would visit the Jagannath temple, he would then go and personally visit Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur. So because they never missed out. It wasn't because a devotee shouldn't think, if I just keep a low profile, a humble attitude, I'll miss out. I have to push my way in front to get what I want out of my devotional life. Devotees should never think like that, because that is not the way the Acharyas showed us how to act. And of course, Sanatana Goswami, he is the personification of humility, and Haridas Thakur is a personification of tolerance. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu built his Krishna consciousness movement on four pillars of humility, tolerance, renunciation, and criticism. The personification of humility was Sanatana Goswami, the personification of tolerance was Haridas Thakur, the personification of renunciation was Ramananda Roya, a Grihastha, unusual. And the personification of the art of constructive criticism was Swarup Damodar. So, this mood of humility, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, he praised that as an essential ingredient to advancing Krishna consciousness. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, think of oneself more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. One should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So, that's... humble attitude and tolerant attitude actually attracts the attention of Krishna. We see this in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we see this in the pastimes of Lord Krishna here visiting Bahulashva. We also see it in Srila Prabhupada. It was unusual because quite often in ISKCON we glorify the competitive spirit. You know, out on Sankirtan, it's a good thing. We can utilize our competitive spirit in order to enthuse each other to do better and better and better. We see, you know, the cowherd boys in Vrindavan, they were chasing after Krishna and they were saying, let me be the first to touch his lotus feet. And someone else said, no, I will be the first in this way. They would be, you know, pushing each other on, and in a playful, ecstatic mood, with some competition, they would chase after Krishna's lotus feet. So that mood of competition can be there. But we have to be careful that that mood of competition should never be an impediment to our devotional service or to someone else's devotional service in that case, or to the preaching of Krishna consciousness. In that case, the competition takes on, you know, a whole different concept where it's actually out of place. To give an example, there was one time in Sydney where Srila Prabhupada actually, the devotees in Sydney, they had a printing press. I think Srila Prabhupada was in America, but in Melbourne, the devotees wanted to start another printing press. And of course, as we know, Srila Prabhupada loves the printing of books and Krishna consciousness literature. And yet, when they wrote a letter asking Prabhupada if they, or Prabhupada had heard that they wanted to start this printing press, Srila Prabhupada was not pleased with it. And he was saying, you know, this competitive mood, in this case it is not good, because better that you cooperate. That's where competitiveness actually takes on the aspect of being an impediment to devotional service. If there's competitiveness, that reduces cooperation between devotees, then that is not good. And Srila Prabhupada immediately picked that up, that if they established a smaller printing press, because they didn't actually have the facility to establish a big printing press. They could have just established something a little small. It wasn't as good as Sydney's, and Srila Prabhupada understood that he thought, if you do this just in a mood of competing temple to temple, they have a press, now we have a press, without really sort of seeing how you could actually have a better advantage by cooperating, that's not good. And he said that you establish this press, and what will happen is these small printing presses that will pop up everywhere, they will produce sort of shoddy quality literatures. And Srila Prabhupada was very determined that the literatures that he produced should be of the best quality. So better than having lots of little presses competing with each other, producing shoddy literatures, Srila Prabhupada prefer have one good quality press, everyone cooperate with that centre and produce the best quality literatures. So, the point being that cooperation is amongst devotees, in that humble attitude is by far the best mood for a devotee to have, rather than competing just for the sake of competing. Because, you know, sometimes we hear that competing is, you know, a good thing in Krishna consciousness, which it is, if it is properly utilized. But if it reduces the humility in devotees, and if it reduces cooperation amongst devotees, then it loses its benefits. So here we see that Krishna reciprocates with that humble devotee, and that he understands the very deep confidential secrets within a devotee's heart, and he understands all their past devotional activities and reciprocates with those devotional activities. And he also empowers the spiritual master to act as his representative to do the same. There's an example in the when Srila Prabhupada was in Sydney, and they had the Radha Gopinath deities. I think they had a new altar, and Srila Prabhupada arrived in Sydney. I think Mohananda Nanda Kumar led a kirtan for the deities, and then Srila Prabhupada sat down and he began to play the kartals. He began to sing, and then he stopped. He looked up, and he was looking through the crowd of devotees, not such a big crowd, and his eyes fell on Jadarani, Jagatarini, and he said, "You lead." Now, Jagatarini Mataji, she'd actually had a long secret, you know, cherished desire to actually sing for Srila Prabhupada. And so, you know, Srila Prabhupada just sort of picked her as a Yuli. And then she remembered that, you know, particular desire. And so she had that opportunity, and she sang this nice Jai Radha Madhava prayers for Srila Prabhupada. And then after that, Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna has been very kind upon you, and he has saved you. There are a lot of different, I guess most devotees will have some experience with their spiritual master, or sometimes with older devotees, with Krishna, how he realizes their consciousness. I remember one time when I was a brahmachari, and there was a darshan upstairs in the room, and Prabhupada's room with the spiritual master, and I walked in, and realizing the rascal I was, I sort of went in and sat right at the back, you know, thinking, oh, no one will see me here. and trying to keep a low profile. And the spiritual master said, come up here. And he actually made me come and sit right at the front next to him. So, strange little experiences. But we all have those experiences where not only Krishna, but he empowers his devotees to reciprocate with the devotees. One should not think, well, Krishna is not here, so therefore, you know, if I don't push myself forward and let everyone know what a big devotee, what such good service I'm doing, then how will they know? But actually, Krishna's spiritual master, the spiritual master, his representative in the devotees, to some degree or another, Krishna empowers them also to reciprocate nicely with the devotees. So, here it describes that Bahulashva, he is glorifying Lord Krishna as the inspiring soul of all life and consciousness, thinking that even an inert dullard like himself could be awakened to devotional awareness by his mercy. So that's always the mood of a devotee. The devotee always understands that whatever service that they're able to do is because Krishna has authorized that devotee to do that particular service. Without Krishna's blessing, it is not possible to do a particular service. By Krishna's blessing, then a blind man can see the stars in the sky, a lame man can cross mountains, and a dumb man can speak very eloquently about Krishna. So whatever a devotee is able to do, that is because Krishna has authorized and blessed that devotee to do that, and the devotees always remember that. That's always their mood. That's why they remain in a humble position. There's actually nothing to be proud of. Without Krishna's mercy, we couldn't even gain the spiritual strength to place one flower before Krishna. We would think, oh, that is, anyone can do that. But without Krishna's mercy, you cannot take a flower and offer it to Krishna. So, you know, devotees are doing so many wonderful services. That is all the mercy of Krishna. That is the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So, another story actually which illustrates this great mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master who is a representative of Krishna. The mercy comes down through the spiritual master. Actually, another story relating to Jagatarini Mataji, that sometime later, while Srila Prabhupada was still in Sydney, Mohananda came in, and the Daily Mirror had an article about her because she was previously in some movies, and there was one with Mick Jagger about Ned Kelly. So they'd actually done this big spread in the Daily Mirror, big pictures, and what was it? Some headline that movie star or Mick Jagger's co-star, what have you, now washing God's pots, some article like that, and there was a picture of her, one picture of her in nice in a sari, and another picture of her in her civvies, but of course, the sort of pictures she wouldn't want Srila Prabhupada to see. So, previous to becoming a devotee. And anyway, Mohananda, he actually took that paper and he ran up to Prabhupada's room, and she didn't want Srila Prabhupada to see it. And she went up, she followed him in the room. And Prabhupada said, just see, in this picture, looking at the picture with her as a devotee, he said, she looks happy, blissful. And in this picture, you know, dress, actress sort of clothes, she looks morose. And he was saying that, you know, before coming to Krishna consciousness, all my disciples, all their lives were dark. Illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating. All their lives were dark. And now that they have become devotees, and then, you know, they're very happy like that. And he was saying that, of course, the non-devotees, they will not see it like that. They will see it the opposite way. And it's a fact that, you know, if we sometimes, as a devotee, it is things can be a little difficult. We can have, you know, hard times even as a devotee. Some of the services we have to do can require a certain amount of a lot of perseverance and dedication, tolerance, humility. Sometimes the devotees in their association with each other, they sort of, you know, don't quite click together. You know, there are difficulties rising early for Mangalati. You know, so many different things like that. But compared to the dark existence that we had before being a devotee, you know, those little difficulties are really still quite pleasurable. We should always remember that. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada, again, you know, he said to Jagatarini, he said, Krishna has been very, very merciful upon you. He has saved you. He has saved you from material existence. And he said, so many lifetimes we have had, but this one lifetime you give to Krishna, and then whatever you want to do, you can do after that. But this one lifetime you give to Krishna. And so we were discussing actually in Bhakti Shastri the other week about how many lifetimes we've actually had. You know, when Srila Prabhupada says, just give this one lifetime, to us, of course, it seems like a big thing. What, a whole lifetime? You know, give a whole lifetime to Krishna. But we were discussing how the living entity has been in material existence since time immemorial. We are in Kali Yuga, which lasts for 432,000 years. And then previous to that, there was Dwapara Yuga, which was twice that. And then before that, there was Treta Yuga, which is about three times Kali Yuga. And before that, there was Satya Yuga, which is about four times Kali Yuga. It adds up to about 4 million years or something like that. So that's one Divya Yuga. Four of those cycles is one Divya Yuga. And there are 71 Divya Yugas in one lifetime of Manu. And there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. And such also is the duration of his night. So then you multiply that by 30, you have Brahma's 1 month. You multiply that by 12, you have his 1 year, and he lives 100 of such years, which adds up to about 311.40 billion years. For that long, we have been in this universe. But previous to that, when Mahavishnu breathes in, these universes withdrawn within his body. And when he exhales, these universes expand. So within one breath, that is a whole lifetime of Lord Brahma. We have been there, but we have been coming and going, universe after universe, unlimitedly. So many lifetimes we cannot imagine. So many lifetimes. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, out of those billions and billions and squillions and godzillion years, if you can just give one lifetime, little one in Kali Yuga, you know, 50, 60, 80 years to Krishna, because Krishna has so kindly given us that opportunity, Krishna has saved us, given us that opportunity, we should accept it with open arms and whatever, you know, tolerate any difficulties that may be there. We're prepared to tolerate all the births and deaths and diseases and old age and so much trouble for trillions and trillions of lifetimes. We can tolerate that for a little bit of sense gratification. But as a devotee, a little difficulty, oh, I can't tolerate that. I'm too big a devotee to be putting up with that. But if we can actually, you know, develop that humility and tolerance for one lifetime, then we can give this life to one lifetime to Krishna. Without that, we can't always chant Hare Krishna. So, and Krishna will reciprocate with that humble, tolerant devotee in such a way that one day he will definitely, he will have the personal audience of Krishna. You'll be able to take Krishna's lotus feet upon your lap and massage them to your heart's content. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. That's why we, if we always hear Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are reminded. So if we always stay in the association of devotees, chant Hare Krishna, very important. Chanting Hare Krishna is the most important thing we can do, to just chant Hare Krishna and just associate the devotees humbly. If we do that, we will be able to do it. Without chanting Hare Krishna, it will not be possible to actually devote this life fully to Krishna, because, you know, we chant Hare Krishna and it keeps us under the protection of Krishna's spiritual energy. And everything is revealed. All the material contamination is cleansed away, which makes it very easy. If we chant Hare Krishna, the difficulty of why it's sometimes, as Prabhupada says, the philosophy is simple, but the application is difficult. And why it's difficult, of course, is because, you know, we have a lot of contamination. But if we chant Hare Krishna, that material contamination is cleansed away, and that makes it more and more easy and more relishable. If we stay in the association of devotees, then even if we're not so strong by ourselves against Maya, then in the with the strength of the devotees' association, we get that strength. The association of devotees gives us purification, gives us strength, protection, realization. All those things come just, you know, by associating with devotees and chanting Hare Krishna in their association. And when things get really tough, there's prasadam. Actually, Srila Prabhupada used to say, when you're having difficulty, sit down, have one piece of prasadam, chant one round, and read one slogan. And if you do that, no matter how difficult things are, if you just stop, okay, things are really tough, I'm flipping out here. You sit down, one piece of prasadam, already you're starting to feel good. Chant one round, one sloka, you're right. It works.
one comment about that you were telling about the blessing of Krishna, that dumb can speak and lay can. So the Sanskrit verse is Mukam Karoti Vata Pangum Mangeti Yat Kapatam Mande Paramananda Madhu.
That's a very nice verse, yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to sit here and say anything. Because I'm really dumb. Hey?
When whatever you pick up in childhood, you can remember what you like.
Any other questions, comments? Jai, all glory to Prabhupada.